Hi, everybody. You are listening to F This Movie, the single most homoerotic podcast on the internet.
Sword fights, left and right.
My name is Patrick Bromley. I'm joined tonight once again by my wingman.
That's right.
Doug.
I will never leave you to chase Jester.
Thank you. I only sort of get that reference. F This Movie, fthismovie.blogspot.com is our website. You should visit it and get all of our old shows and also hear our podcasts and also listen to old podcast shows. But also, you can
read lists,
articles. Every Friday, there's this feature.
Oh, it's easily the most poorly executed feature on the site.
It's the one with the most video.
Yes, it's the most YouTube linkage.
Impossible to argue with. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie.
Woohoo! And you should. Honestly, tell your friends to. Just, even if you're not on Twitter often, just log on.
Yeah.
Follow it. Get those numbers up.
That guy running the Twitter, he's doing a good job.
He's doing a very passable job.
He got Debbie Rashan to follow us.
That's right.
Mulva 2 herself.
From Kill Teen Ape.
Kill Teen Ape. What is that, Polish? We love Debbie Rashan.
Yeah.
She's a fox.
She absolutely is.
And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/fthismovie.
That's right.
You can listen to us at DVD Verdict, dvdverdictpresents.com. Thank you to Michael Staley and everybody at DVD Verdict for hosting our show.
Yes, thank you so much. And
again, you sound sarcastic when you say... Try it again.
Okay. No, thank you very much.
Better. It was better.
It means a lot.
We're on Sundays, so we're like church.
Exactly. We're the Sabbath. Wait, is the Sabbath Saturday?
Am I leaving anything out?
Just iTunes?
Oh, yeah, iTunes. Definitely subscribe to us in the iTunes store. And a big thanks to Randy, who emailed us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. For weeks, we've been harping about, like, hey, how do you... Hold on. We've been harping on, like, hey, someone tell us how to get all of our shows in iTunes, because it's only the most... like the 10 most recent right now, and we don't know how to fix it. And so Randy, a listener, emailed me with a link to a possible solution, and I'm sorry to say it wasn't the answer, but I do appreciate the effort. So thank you to Randy,
Randy, thank you for trying. For nothing.
And the rest of you, it's time to step up. Every week we do a show for free.
I know.
That makes your ears laugh. And help us out. Get all of our shows in iTunes. Tell us how to do it.
That'd be nice. We'd need some help.
So let's get into this. Doug, have you seen anything good?
Wait, were those all the websites? We should list more websites. What about archive.org?
Is that well, that's just... I don't want to get into what that is, but that's how people subscribe. It's not important, but...
All right, spoiler alert.
If you're looking for websites, I recommend the Drudge Report. is good.
That will tell me who I should hate today.
That's right.
What was your question?
Hey, Doug, have you seen anything good lately?
I saw
my heart was
things.
Not in that. Did you
it
notice?
Was absolutely
I just was
not.
Like,
was
here's the stupid
form.
Thing I
know,
say.
It's this thing that you say.
Cinema
it's
popcorn.
Not even. I saw a couple things on Blu-ray and Blu-ray. I saw...
What, no, HD, DVD?
HD, I saw some things on DivX.
Nice.
I subscribed, I had the cable modem, actually analog modem.
Your player is unlocked.
It is unlocked for good now. I saw a couple things on Blu-ray. I borrowed some stuff from you, and I appreciate that. Thank you. Now
you're welcome.
It's on the record as me thanking you
for
stuff.
Okay, good.
I saw Easy A, which is very enjoyable and forgettable, but still funny enough to watch. Emma Stone is the reason that movie works. She is very charming and adorable, but also funny and kind of gets it, you know?
Right, and doesn't seem to be, like, really trying to be charming and
right.
adorable,
that's
you know?
That's a big part of it, It's effortless, and it's not... Because whenever they try, it always seems very needy and desperate. And
it's Miley Cyrus, or Hillary Duff, or whoever.
It's that guy, it reminds me of... And I have not seen this movie, but it's the guy in the trailer for Take Me Home Tonight. The sidekick friend.
Oh, yes.
Just trying... He was also in that dumb Dane Cook movie.
Yes.
Just trying so hard
I cannot come up with his name right now.
Forgot
it's Dan
it.
Something.
Dan something die.
He's a nightmare.
Just
he was
die.
Supposed to play Sam Kinison in like an HBO biopic.
That'd be perfect.
But it ended up apparently not happening.
Oh, God. Thank God.
He needs more work, that guy.
Yeah, right. By the way, I've not been in any feature movies.
No.
And that guy is in stuff.
He
so
is.
The world is really making sense about now. Emma Stone's great, and I actually thought she was a little foxy, too. And then I had to remind myself that she was born in 1988, which is the year before my nephew was born. And my
that's after tonight's movie Top Gun came out.
That's absolutely correct. She it's a couple was years born after. In a
post Top Gun world.
I know. It's like this is all she's known as Top. Wait, spoiler. We're doing Top Gun, oh, and yeah. Goose dies. Okay, wow. That's the spoiler. I said spoiler. Shit. You can't cut that shit out.
Holy!
I know. And if you haven't, if you don't know, shit. Goose dies. By the way, in Roger Ebert's review of Top Gun, he mentions his best friend dies.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was surprised. I mean, we'll get to this later, but watching it again today, yeah. I was surprised how early in the movie. In my head, it always happens at the end of the movie, but it's yeah. like an hour in.
It's yeah, it's about it's like the halfway point, and then yeah. he kind of quits. It's the whatever. We'll get into that
movie.
So anyway, I saw Easy A.
I
saw Get Him to the Greek, which is again
Get Him to the
fine. It's a fine movie.
Yeah.
Russell Brand. I know some people out there, as Patrick kind of points out to me that. There's some people that really like him and some people that hate this
a
guy.
A lot of people really hate him.
That think he's really annoying and kind of just bewildering or something, yeah, you know, just confusing. Yeah. Like, why is he wearing these tight pants? I personally find him very charming. I think he's funny. I think it's an effortless thing. Again, kind of in the same vein as Emma Stone, just effortlessness. I saw that. Aside from some, you know, kind of weird plot points and some stuff I choose to forget. It was fun. And then I saw something that was not fun. It was horrible. But again, in my mind... It's funny because I had three movies to watch this weekend. I kind of wanted to watch, crank out three movies.
Three comedies.
I wanted to watch Easy A.
From 2010.
Get Him to the Greek and Date Night.
Ooh.
And
you should have had a date night to see Date Night.
I saw these and in my mind I'm thinking these are all the same. These are all going to be the same kind
right,
of like
right.
not trying very hard, occasionally funny movies. And I was, I guess, in that respect, pleasantly surprised. Although, again, I'm not. It's not a ringing endorsement for Easy A or Get Him to the Greek. Yeah. Although Easy A is a little better than, you know, than that. Aside from that, some weird, again, plot stuff. That's yeah, like there's the teacher
climax of that movie is a mess. Too.
Yeah. But Date Night is a mess. The whole yeah. thing is a mess. It's yeah. really just one. Like it's an hour and a half, and it feels like it's 2.5 hours long. I like Steve Carell and Tina Fey a lot. It's obvious that they had very little to do with this, like the writing of it.
Well, and that's why that movie got a pass when it came out. Like, it was so bad, but every critic and every person I talked to that saw it was just like, no, it was okay because I like them.
Right.
Well, I like them too, but I don't like them in something that is shitty.
And honestly, I saw, because during the credits, which is in vogue in a lot of comedies, they do like the cutscenes. And especially with two comics, because they're very funny people, Steve Carell and Tina Fey, like, they do their outtakes or alternate takes.
Right.
So when they walk up to the restaurant, instead of doing the accent that appears in the movie, they do try a different accent. And I have to think that like, wow, making this must have been a lot of fun because in their minds, they're thinking, I'm just having a lot of fun. I'm doing a lot of accents, but you forget that like the final product is all that fun stuff removed. So right. it's just the thing that exists on the page, which is not very funny. And again, it's just this concept that in theory is kind of interesting. Like they take a reservation and it kind of escalates and snowballs. But I have a big problem with any movie that like can easily be, and this is my big issue with Meet the Parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Meet the Parents is beloved by a lot of people, including like all of my family, which I just have to grab them by the shoulders and shake them sometimes because I don't want to start a family argument because there's a lot of drama right now. My sister's dog is not doing well. But I want to shake them and be like, Meet the Parents is not very funny because if Ben Stiller said like literally one sentence, it would be like, oh, okay.
That explains
exactly
everything that you're doing.
Right, and we forgive the weirdness of what's been happening.
Right.
And this movie isn't quite as obvious as that, but there's a lot of it like, no, really, we're not these people.
It's just
like,
terrible mistaken identity. And I hate mistaken identity. I'm the guy who like can't watch North by Northwest because it upsets me. I'm just like, oh my God, just someone believe him. And that's a good movie. So imagine Date Night, which is horrible. I could not have been more excited when I heard Date Night announced. It's like Steve Carell and Tina Fey are going to be in a comedy for Fox called Date Night, and that's all I knew. And I'm like, that is fucking awesome. I want to see them as a couple. That is great.
Right.
And then I saw the first trailer, and it was like, oh, my heart died.
It could be anyone. Why cast them?
I don't want to see them in a movie where like they're screaming and hanging on to cars and like shooting guns and being chased. I have no interest in seeing that movie, especially directed by Sean Levy, I want to say directed it. He's a terrible, terrible, artless director. He's the enemy of comedy, and...
Speaking of, like, dumb car things, there's a whole thing where they, like, lock cars with... It's J.B. Smoove as a cab driver.
Yeah.
And he can be funny sometimes. And it's like...
There's a lot of people in it that could be funny. I think, like, James Franco and Mila Kunis probably come off the best in that movie.
And they're so, like, obviously there for, like, 2 hours shoot their little
thing.
A lot
of people are. A lot of people seem to show up just because, like, they knew that this was going to be sort of high profile. So they agreed to...
But there's a scene with the cars, and it goes on for like, I mean, probably 18 minutes.
Oh, God.
And I'm just like, and Steve Carell is crawling on the hoods, and it's everything you said is true. It's just,
I caught like the last 20 minutes the other day because it's been showing a lot on HBO, and mm-hmm. it reminded me how much I don't like that movie. But I did see my one favorite.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, I don't know which one it is. It was when she's picking outfits. Is that the thing?
It's when they're trying to get into the club.
Okay.
And the bouncer like sasses them.
Right.
And they sass him back, and Tina Fey is all brassy and talks her way into the club and then whispers to Steve Carell, "I'm not really chewing gum."
Right, it's pretty funny.
It's a great little aside. It was the one laugh in the entire movie.
Which again speaks to our point that I guarantee that is not in the script.
Yeah,
that is
right, right, just right.
Her like on the That's spot, right. like doing some sort of, you know, ad lib stuff, you know.
Sorry.
Anyway, so the movie was really disappointing. That was actually how we ended our weekend. It was Sunday night, like, oh, time to go to bed and start the work week and kill ourselves.
Awesome.
With murder.
Date night.
Yeah, date night was a piece of garbage. And again, it's like, why do these funny people? It could have been, I put this on the Twitter thing, it could have been like, it felt like a Tom Allen movie. Or Tim Allen movie.
Or a
Tom Arnold.
Tim Allen's lesser known.
Tom Allen. He has way less coke busts. it could be a Tim Allen movie where it's just like him and...
Right. Him and Kirstie Alley.
Right.
And they have to hide out in Amish country. And it could be called For Richer or Poorer.
Oh, you're onto something,
what do you
Patrick.
Think? What do you think?
I love it. So anyway, that's what I kind of snippet of what I've seen.
Terrible.
I know. So shoot me in the brain. What about you? What have you seen?
I really haven't seen anything.
You saw Fargo.
New. Yeah, I guess I saw. I watched Fargo
on
again.
Your goddamn awesome home theater system in your basement. You see,
he means my laptop, which I sometimes bring into the basement.
And when I say sea sucker, I mean penis sucker.
I watched Fargo again, and I can't stand how good that movie is. Sometimes watching Coen Brothers movies, I had this reaction during True Grit. I start to get angry because it's like, this is so good, and it seems so easy.
Yeah.
Like, even Scorsese movies, which can be great, you feel him sweat a little bit. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They're really directed, and they're really, like... A lot goes into that.
Right.
And I'm not saying, you know, he's any less of a director, but like they make it seem so easy and they write all their own stuff too,
right.
which makes it even. But I was thinking of Fargo when I was rewatching Top Gun today because, man, Fargo is a movie that spells nothing out for the audience.
But Fargo has a lot less F-14 Tomcats engaging.
True.
MIG,
it spells
MIG
nothing out for the audience. It just lets you figure stuff out and like fill in the blanks, and that is great. And every time I watch it, I think that movie's so moving. There's this book that I think I've talked about on the podcast before.
Boring bookcast.
called like The Mind of the Modern Movie Maker or something.
Ooh, alliteration.
Yeah. Do you see what they did? It's just interviews with like 20 different directors. And at the end of every interview, there's a questionnaire that they ask every director. And it's like, what's your favorite food at the movies? What's the movie that made you realize film was an art? What's your favorite movie of all time? What's your favorite movie character? And I always think that's such a hard question to answer. Who's your favorite movie character? But I have to think, and there's so many good ones to choose, but Marge Gunderson from Fargo would be in my top three at least. She could make a run for my number one favorite. She's so, so great and so fully realized and like complicated. And I'm watching Top Gun, and that is a movie that gives the audience no credit ever at any point. Ever.
What are you talking about?
Ever.
What do you mean?
And it was really upsetting to me.
What are you talking about?
Because more movies are Top Gun than they are Fargo.
Well, and there's a reason, I hate to say it, but people obviously respond to Top Gun, and it made all this money, and I think the budget...
Most people are wrong.
And again, we're talking $1986, but it cost... I think $15 million to make.
Yeah, wow.
Which is incredible because how much...
It would be $150 million.
It would be more, I think, more than that because, I mean...
And it would all be all CGI.
Well, right. They wouldn't do any stuff that was,
right.
you know,
right.
would actually threaten...
And Tom Cruise would have slimmer eyebrows, I think. Because what's going on?
And Kelly McGillis would have what? This is just an opening for you.
She'd be chowing on Meg Ryan, I assume. I mean, and Meg Ryan wouldn't even look like Meg Ryan. And Anthony Edwards would be bald. And Al Kilmer would be fat. And Tom Skerritt would be dead. He's not dead. He's alive.
And the principal from Back to the Future would still be the principal from Back to the Future.
And he would look the exact same, because I just saw him at Comic-Con last summer.
He's not changed at all.
He is the same, yeah.
So the movie cost $15 million to make.
Yeah.
It made,
we're talking about Top Gun now, everyone.
It's Top Gun.
We worked into this effortlessly from Fargo.
and we're talking 86 Reagan dollars, which are not good anymore. I think it made, with domestic and international, made over $300 million.
Yeah, it made close to $400 million. In 86, that's insane that's money.
That's insane. So obviously it's like, well, the audience responds to something, and what yes. they respond to has nothing to do with the characters, has nothing to do with the love, you know, the romance between Kelly McGillis and Tom Cruise, because that is, there's nothing there. Right. It has everything to do with, like, that was fucking awesome. The planes are really cool to look at.
Disagree.
Ding!
So here's the thing. Mark Harris, a writer, recently wrote an article for GQ called The Day the Movies Died. And it's a great article, and it talks about things that we've talked about a lot on this podcast, especially like the end of the year podcast and the end of the summer podcast.
Are you implying that Mark Harris listens to F This Movie?
I'm pretty sure he's following us on Twitter, twitter.com/F This Movie. Him and Debbie Rashan. One of them is way hotter.
Which
and
one is killed
way more teen apes? So it's a great article. You should read it, but it doesn't tell you anything you don't already know, which is just that movies are in a bad, bad place right now, and they show no sign of getting better. But in the article, he states that a lot of people attribute the late 70s to be the sort of the birth of the blockbuster to be when movies went to shit, Jaws and Star Wars. And he says, no, actually, there's artistry in those movies, and they're made by great directors. Really, when movies went to shit was Top Gun, because that's a movie that was packaged by producers
right.
and created this producer as auteur aesthetic, the Absolutely. Simpson Bruckheimer aesthetic that we still see today.
May he rest in peace.
In some of our, Jerry Bruckheimer died. In some of our,
I think
most,
inside he did. He's rotten yeah. to the core.
In some of our most successful movies would not exist without the Simpson Bruckheimer aesthetic.
You know, it's funny because during the show prep for this podcast,
yeah.
I've seen Top Gun obviously. This is obvious to everyone listening. I've seen Top Gun a bunch of times, and I watched it again. But I also like did a little research today. I was reading articles, like I read Ebert's review
Good
from
job.
1986, and was reading some about the facts. And also, I'm kind of a nerd for, if you've listened, you've heard me talk before about war, and I like the war movies and, you know, stuff like military type stuff. So I'm like kind of a nerd for the technology too, like right. the planes and the aircraft carriers and all this different stuff. So I was doing some research on the movie then too, and it was interesting how the genesis of the inspiration, the idea for the movie, and how it right. became what it became. It was an article called Top Guns, written for a magazine.
That's going to be the sequel to Top Gun, right?
I think so. An article called Top Guns, written for a magazine called, I think, California Magazine. Very original.
Where do you publish it?
I think it's in New Hampshire. And it was seen by a couple producers, and I think it was brought to the attention of Jerry Bruckheimer, and he kind of like sought out writers to write this thing.
He jump-started Don Simpson's heart.
And I guess a lot of writers
pulled him
passed.
Off three dead hookers.
They didn't. From what I read, no names were given about writers who had passed on the project, but a bunch of writers passed and said, no thanks, I'm not interested in writing this movie about like
nothing.
Fighter jet. Right. It's not about war. It's about just training.
It's about nothing.
And then of course it was, their names, you'll help me. It's Jack or
Mayhoffer.
No, and Rod Stiffington.
I don't remember the names.
The writers are Cash and Epps.
Yes,
and they wrote a bunch of stuff from the '80s. Yeah. They wrote "Secret of My Success."
Woo!
They wrote "Turner and Hooch." They wrote a bunch of stuff that. Was,
so they're like credible writers.
They are absolutely IMDb that shit right there. So basically, Bruckheimer and Simpson approached these two writers, and they wrote a draft. And the first draft came back to again. The writers wrote this thing and came back to the producers.
Right.
And this is the whole point of, I'm just trying to, you know, to your point, say this, that the producers really crafted this thing. And they rejected the first draft
right.
and said, go back and write a second draft. And they brought it back. And then I think there was even a third draft that was incorporating some Navy changes
right,
for like the, you know, like what can or can't be shown.
Yeah. Cause they had to clear stuff with the Navy.
Right.
Including
right, right.
like the whole Kelly McGillis part.
Yeah.
Well, Dawn Steele shot down a draft, too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She hated the character.
Which is just interesting because you got Dawn Steele as a studio head.
Right.
And you've
May
got
she
these...
rest in peace.
Is she dead?
Yeah.
Oh, nerds. So you've got Dawn...
Gunn killed almost everyone.
Dawn, it's like Poltergeist.
Goose.
I think Whip Hubley's dead. Just kidding. My brother-in-law's last name is Hubley. Anyway, so you've got two producers, one studio head... who are dictating the terms to,
right.
You know, the writers that are bringing drafts in and working with the Navy and spending shitloads of money to shoot the stuff authentically, too, which is almost even more mind-blowing because, as we said, it's I think it would cost $15 million to make, which in today's would be 8-10 times that much. Right. Plus, it would all be CGI. So all the money that they're putting towards this movie, you could actually see it on the screen, I think. You know, right. they're spending. I read another thing that said they had to buy the flight time and the fuel, and I think it was like $7,800 an hour to rent a jet, basically, to fly around. You know, so I don't know. It just it's the definitely the movie that is created by the producers. They took lessons from, I'm sure, their successes with, like, Beverly Hills Cop, which I think it was 84.
Yeah.
And there was some
Flashdance.
Right, and they're just like, well, now we're making this shit, and it's going to be about fighter jets and not much else.
They kind of ruined movies, and Top Gun is obviously very influential. Very influential. Tony Scott created, you know, what would become the Tony Scott sort of aesthetic,
yeah.
Which then was co-opted by Michael Bay and Simon West and all these douchebags who directed for Jerry Bruckheimer eventually after Don Simpson died. And this is the this is one of those podcasts where I'm just going to come off like a huge asshole because Doug and I have been friends for a long time, so he knows going into this that he's going to be the guy who kind of likes Top Gun,
yeah.
And I'm the guy who fucking hates Top Gun.
But I can acknowledge that Top Gun, okay, yeah, right.
Yeah, you know that it's not great. A lot of people don't agree. Like, a lot of people just think it's great, and yeah. Even some people who do the show, Mike is a big Top Gun fan. My wife, Erica, big Top Gun fan. Now, she like you, knows that it's terrible.
She gave me instructions, though, before this podcast to say, I think the end of the last podcast as I was leaving, she was like, next week we're doing Top Gun. And she was like, defend that shit. You got to defend it. Because knowing how hard you would come down on it.
Right. Well, she loves Tom Cruise.
I did not prepare to defend it, by the way.
No. Yeah, she has loved Tom Cruise since Top Gun.
And
she
love Mimi Rogers, so it works out really
well. Yeah. I can't stand Top Gun.
You can't stand it?
No. I always thought I was like kind of indifferent, and I guess I'm still indifferent towards it, but watching it again today, it was really, really upsetting me. Here's the thing. I saw Top Gun. I never saw it in the theater when it came out the first time. I saw it on video and forgot about it. Even as a kid, I was like, I don't care about Top Gun. Years go by. Doug and I drive down to Chicago's Navy Pier in like the late 90s.
Kind of forgot about
and
that.
Saw it on an IMAX screen at like midnight. This was our pilgrimage to see Top Gun on a giant screen. I still was like, what's the big deal with Top Gun? A couple years later...
But man, the size of that screen, it was so big!
It was absolutely big.
Big screen is what I'm saying.
A couple years later, they showed it at the AMC by my house, like as a midnight show. I saw it again. So I know I've seen Top Gun 3 times prior to today, right?
Okay.
I have no idea what that movie's about. I can't remember a fucking thing from Top Gun, except for like those horrible, iconic scenes, like... where he sings to her in the bar. Like, I remember moments out of Top Gun, but like, if someone sat me down prior to today and even maybe after today and said, hey, talk me through the plot of Top Gun, I couldn't do it.
I mean, yeah, you could, because you're talking like a point by point plot, like what actually happens, but you're talking about like, what is Top Gun? Like, why does it exist? Or what does it mean? That's a different question than like, what happens
movie? What's the story of Top Gun?
You're asking what's the story, what's the plot of Top Gun?
What's the story of Top Gun? Not what's the plot, what's the story of Top Gun?
I don't know what that means. Why are you putting me in this corner?
A plot is obviously like scene by scene, here's everything that happens. The story is sort of the overall general, you know, hero's journey is Star Wars. So that's the story of Star Wars. What's the story of Top Gun?
The story of Top Gun is a hotshot, fly-by-the-seat-of-his-pants lieutenant named... Pete Maverick Mitchell gets a chance to go to the Top Gun or the Navy Fighter School in Miramar, California, after proving to his commander that he's risky but also a very good pilot.
Mm-hmm.
He goes there and tries to impress a lot of people. Keep in mind, he's carrying a lot of demons. Okay?
Yeah,
because he's got, you know, the father figure that was killed during Vietnam War as a fighter pilot, and always a lot of mystery around that, and not quite sure what happened, you know? And so he's got that baggage carrying with him, so he's trying to impress people and he's flying with a ghost, as Goose said. He's like, every time you go up there, you're flying, you have to, you know, compete with a ghost. What, am I not doing a service?
No, you are, but every time you mention something else, you're reminding me of something that I really don't like about Top Gun.
Okay, so I'm not done yet. So along the way, he meets a nice, very big-bone lesbian named Kelly McGillis. I think her name is Charlotte, call sign Charlie Blackwood, I believe her last name is, but she's a civilian, so you don't have to salute her. And he tries a romance with her. And he later realizes she's an instructor at the very same school. By the way, instructor
now
slash...
Now you're just telling me the plot. You're not
slash astrophysicist.
Yeah, right, right.
What? All right, so then they start a romance, but there's a conflict there, too, because she has to put on certain airs because she's the professor and he's the student. And he's got to, like, you know, wrestle with falling in love with a lesbian. And she doesn't look like Amber Heard, so that's a problem. At least for me it is. And then Goose dies. Spoiler! About halfway through the movie. He's got two ghosts that are on his shoulders. One, let's call one the angel, and one the bear. No, the demon. And so then he has to, like, prove himself. He's about to quit, but he goes to have a one-on-one conversation with the boss who actually happened to be co-pilots or fly at the same time in Vietnam with his father.
Convenient.
Tells him the story. Exactly. Well, it's a movie, you know.
And a horrible movie.
He decides, you know what? I am a good pilot. And he goes and he graduates and he's a better man than that. He doesn't let that stuff get him down. And they go and fight Libya, maybe? North Korea? It's never
all
quite
I know
said.
Is I'm happy when they are dead.
Well, right. It's a, you know, it's funny too. And this is a little nitpicky thing for me. I'm done talking about the story.
You're going to, yeah, okay. You're going to nitpick Top Gun?
All right. So
there are flaws.
You've got the
Gun?
Navy flying F-14 Tomcats, yes. Which are, by the way, decommissioned as of 2006. This is my little nerd. I love stuff like that. You've got the enemy flying MiG-28s, which are not real because there's no MiG-28. There's a MiG-29. There's a MiG-25, maybe. There's no MiG-28. But they're flying. They're painted black. These Air Force F-5E.
Do you think it was Cobra?
Cobra. La, 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 la. And it's never said, but I also read in my research that the first draft or the second draft of the movie actually made it more specific.
Right, I'm
they
sure
tried to make it over.
No,
like,
take that out.
They made it over Cuban waters.
Right.
Where it was like America versus Cuba, and they said, no, it's got to be international.
We just want to shoot down generic foreigners.
And it's got to be international waters, like right. Very politically correct and, you know, like over, you know, Indian Ocean. So it could be North
present
Korea.
Day.
Present day. It still is present day.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was an issue with me, because even when I was a kid, I'm like, I have that model airplane hanging in my bedroom, and that's an F-5E.
That is always what's bothered me about Top Gun.
Thank you.
Not the overall shittiness of the movie.
What are you talking about? You don't like my story.
I liked your story.
Can I make it a movie?
Yes. What should we call it?
Top Guns.
Could they say that more times in the movie, too, at the end, when he's like, I'm thinking about being an instructor. Top Gun! I hate it. Okay, so besides being like an airplane nerd, mm-hmm. Do you like Top Gun? On more than just like, I dig the airplanes.
That's a very interesting question, and I will answer it after this quick song about Top Gun. Let me tell you a story about Top Gun before I answer that question.
All right.
When I was a kid, my father, he passed away a couple years ago. My father was a pilot, not
in
professionally. No, he was a private pilot. And as my brother is, too. And he still lives, so go figure. So I've got my father and my brother, who are both pilots. And when I was a kid, my dad had his pilot's license and actually bought with his friend a plane. They bought a Cessna 172. And it was at DuPage Airport. This is all irrelevant. I don't know how I'm going into details.
This is why you like Top Gun? So okay. This is the background I need to have had.
Maybe. Because my dad was a pilot, had a Cessna, my brother was a pilot.
Do you love Iron Eagle?
No.
Yeah, see? Your theory does not hold water.
All right, yeah. Iron Eagle 2, yes. All right, so my point is, when I was a kid, I used to go up in the plane a lot and go to air shows and watch the Kristen Eagles and stuff do all their, you know, demonstration flying.
Yeah.
When this movie came out, it was like a thing in my family.
Yeah.
And that's my point. It's like, my right. dad bought this, and I think actually... It was one of the first VHS tapes that was affordable, because
right.
before this, you know, tapes cost, what, 80, 100 bucks?
Yeah, 800 bucks.
Wow. And this is one of the first tapes that cost like 20 bucks.
Yeah.
So
price
my family
to sell, they used to call
it. Bought it, I think, when it like first came out.
That's how come I had Total Recall.
We watched it all the time. It was like a thing where my family sat down and watched Top Gun. And honestly, I do think... You could say whatever you want about the story, as I just pointed out, is pretty
there isn't
horrible.
A story,
it's
but
pretty
okay.
ridiculous. The aerial sequences in this movie are spectacular. They're really
yeah.
excellent. Like everything, the jets flying by. I mean, all the, as you point out too, all the stuff. It's not CGI. It's absolutely real.
Right.
You've got these million-dollar aircraft flying at you know very high speeds in the skies. It's great. It's really fun to watch. And I think so much of that overshadowed, and I think this would happen across the country and across everyone. Everyone who loves Top Gun is like, it's awesome because of that. It's a weird phenomenon because you are so willing to look past lots of flaws about it just because you're so, like, when the action sequences are on, I think that by and large, they're still very effective, you know, 25 years later. That's what I think.
I think a lot of people do come out of Top Gun charged up on the aerial sequences that end the movie, and they think that's awesome. I think a lot of other people just literally think all of Top Gun is awesome because he's a maverick, literally a maverick, and the songs are great, and they fucking sweat and play volleyball.
Oscar award-winning songs?
Yeah, there's all this, like, tough guy dialogue and guys who are maybe going to kiss, and they love all of Top Gun. Watching Top Gun today, there are three things that I could say I liked about Top Gun. One, the aerial sequences that you just mentioned. If you remove all of the scenes inside the cockpit of people talking.
Where they're spinning around.
Yes, like, you have equipment, right? You should be looking at that, not out your cockpit window, like, to watch what's happening. That's how you drive. That's not how you fly fighter jets. And in the last scene especially, go home and watch the last scene again, because...
Okay.
It's like... You have to pay attention to this phenomenon, because once I noticed it, I noticed nothing else. Every line of dialogue that's spoken in the cockpits in that last fight is said at least twice. It's like fucking Jimmy two times in Goodfellas. Every line that Tom Cruise says, the Val Kilmer, they say everything at least twice.
So Iceman's got to get the papers.
Exactly. So that's one thing. I liked that. I think that's good. Two, I like Anthony Edwards' performance. I think he has, like, pretty good comic timing, and, like, yeah, he's not so obnoxiously, like, the comic relief, goofy right. best friend. And I like the Harold Faltermeyer music. I think it works.
I mean, the theme song for that movie is iconic. It's, like,
right.
it's still...
Well, in the opening, I'm just like, well, this is just a fucking recruiting commercial, right? But I'm looking backwards. I'm thinking backwards, because what happened is, I think recruiting commercials copied Top Gun, not the other way around.
You know, it's interesting, just a quick point about the recruiting thing.
It had to have gone up after Top Gun came out, right?
The enlistment into the Navy, this is what I read.
See, this is fucked up.
Went up 500%.
That is fucked up.
So people saw this, like 18-year-olds or 17-year-olds saw this movie, or 19-year-olds, maybe 20-year-olds, maybe some 21-year-olds. I'm not going to split hairs here. They saw this movie, and they went to the Navy and the Air Force even. It's not even an Air Force movie, and they want to be fighter pilots, because it is pretty awesome. And I you know, you watch the Blue Angels or the Thunderbirds, these, you know, air shows, and it's awesome.
It's not awesome, because I would be Goose.
It would be awesome,
like,
if you
were... Jack. Ow!
My brain!
I'll never fuck Meg Ryan again!
I'll take you to Better Lose You Forever! Apparently he lost her forever.
Damn it.
So the recruiting went up
500%. But don't worry, because Jesus fucking Christ, Top Gun. All right.
Well, hold on real quick.
All right,
there's another quick point about how because it cost so much for the studio to make this movie with the Navy, because obviously the Navy, in fact, what I read was most of the sequences that are kind of just there where planes take off and stuff, that's all just the normal stuff. That's not for the movie. They're not taking off for the movie. The whole opening sequence where the guys are crawling around the deck and stuff, all those shots of the planes taking off and landing is just them going about their daily business.
Right.
There were a couple scenes where they, like, specifically wanted the sun to be behind a plane or whatever, and it cost money. And I mentioned before that to rent the plane, not rent, but to have the plane for an hour to do what you want cost almost $8,000. Another quick little aside about money was, and I don't know if this is anecdotal, but I think I read somewhere, not on, like, just a website, but in an article about the making of the movie, where Tony Scott wanted, it was like the sun setting, it's the magic hour, or right before the magic hour, because the sun is still up, and he wanted the planes to take off and land with the sun behind it, and the skipper had to change course because they were going in the wrong direction or something, and Tony Scott was like, I need this shot, and the captain says, well, to change course costs, like, literally would cost $25,000. And Tony Scott wrote a check and gave it to the captain to change the course of the ship. But that's not my point. My point is...
The check bounced.
He's
and the ship sank.
Checks that his butt can't cash. Line should be in the movie.
It should.
Because it costs so much to work with the Navy, the studio actually approached the Navy after the movie came out when the video was coming out and said, if you want, we can put a 90-second commercial before the movie, a recruitment commercial for the Navy, or for the Army in general.
To be followed by a two-hour recruitment commercial for the Navy.
Absolutely. What's interesting is they approached the Pentagon. The Pentagon like, in their wisdom. Because I think they also said, like, waive the $1 million. We'll just put the studio, like, it's a wash. You know, we'll put the recruitment video on, and you could let, you know, those expenses go. The Pentagon wisely said, this whole movie is a recruitment video.
Yeah, right.
We have no need to do that. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
But then they did put a recruitment commercial at the beginning of Memphis Belle, right? Do I have that right?
They did in a Diet Pepsi. Remember that Diet Pepsi commercial for
yes,
Top Gun?
Yes.
Where the thing wouldn't, it was the yes. Diet Pepsi was stuck in the, yes. the cup holder and you had to turn the plane upside down. It made me drink a lot of Diet Pepsi because that's the choice of a new generation.
So this is the movie that made the career of Tony Scott, obviously.
Hashtag Diet Pepsi slogans from the 80s.
really cemented the power of the Simpson-Bruckheimer machine, even though they had had several giant hits already. And while Risky Business had made Tom Cruise like a star, Top Gun is the movie that made him a fucking crazy superstar, huge yeah. star, despite his weird unibrow, which goes away after Top Gun. but he had his like teeth capped for Top Gun that Simpson-Bruckheimer paid for.
That happened a lot with like Ben Affleck.
They did the same thing for Armageddon. So the movie, you know, the first, I would say, half, maybe two-thirds of Tom Cruise's career are made up of movies exactly like Top Gun. And he's great at like picking very obvious movie star parts and turning movies into giant hits, but they're so not interesting. And the movie is basically Tom Cruise is awesome and kicks fucking ass.
Right.
And then something happens and he's like, maybe I don't kick fucking ass. But then by the end, guess what? He totally kicks. He remembers that he kicks fucking ass. And that's exactly what Top Gun is. Even watching the scene where he's consoling, air quotes, Goose's widow, Meg Ryan, it totally instantly becomes about him being awesome. She's like, don't worry about me, I'll be fine. I know your best friend is dead, but you have to fly because you're fucking awesome. And he's like, you're right, I do. The entire movie, again, here's where I think of Fargo, where characters say nothing about themselves, their personalities come out, you know, through their actions or through weird asides that they say. Top Gun is one of those movies, and action movies do this all the time, lots of movies do this all the time, where that rather than write a character like Maverick, which, by the way, your work is done! He's named Maverick, and everyone only calls him Maverick. Everyone just goes by their call signs right. all the time. No one has a name, and his is Maverick. Goose? I'm Goose, and I'm Maverick. Like, who's cooler than Maverick? No one. You're fucking awesome, Maverick.
I'm Old Brown Shoe.
I'm Turd. Everyone only calls each other their fucking call signs. Where the fuck was I going with this?
I'm Ford Taurus.
Oh, rather than write a character... A, your work is done when he's named Maverick. But then beyond that, rather than write a character, every character in the movie just is constantly talking, like telling him who he is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's always just like, you don't play by the rules, but you're fucking awesome, man. Every character, and there's just all that backstory. Even when they're not talking about stuff about the dad, and just like, listen, Maverick, I know your dad died on that one day, and I know there's ghosts on this plane. They're constantly trying
to. That was the name of the movie, and then Ghost Plane. Well, there's a whole scene too with the bosses at Top Gun at the school. It's Tom Skerritt and Michael Ironside, Chester.
Merlin is Tim Robbins.
Yeah, which by the way, it's kind of jarring to see him because he's like, you don't belong in this movie.
What is the whole opening too, where fucking John Stockwell is like, I look at a picture of my family and now I'm sweating and I freeze up. What is that?
After the plane leaves, you mean?
What is that? We're fine. We're safe. I can't fly. Oh, I need Tom Cruise to talk me down because he's fucking awesome.
So, like, talk me down because they can't do anything. He's going to be on his wingtip. He's got no fuel. So there's a scene with Michael Ironside and Tom Skerritt. No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Because at the end of it, I was still like, Top Gun's pretty all right.
On what? Okay.
Stop
make it. Your point. Make your point. And then I have another question.
Just calm down.
I can't. This movie gets a pass, and I don't understand it.
No, here's what bothers me about it. Now, this is a second point I'll make. The first point is to your point about them talking about Tom Maverick. It's like when Maverick leaves the office after he was disciplined for engaging whomever, I forgot his name, and broke the rules, but he gets chewed out. But then they leave, and then the guys are like, he's reckless. And then Tom Skerritt's like, but he got you, didn't he? He just. That's not a point so much. That's just the scene from the movie.
Horrible dialogue.
Okay, what I did today, I also went on RottenTomatoes.com and I looked.
I've heard of it.
I looked at the tomato meter scale of fresh versus rotten.
They have to come up with another system because that is horrible.
I prefer to call it the thermometer. So the thermometer had fresh and rotten, and it's funny because it is this weird movie, and I know there's a lot of movies out there like this, but this is one of the ones I think it's so obvious. It's bipolar. You've got the critics, I think it's like 40% rotten, and the fans is like 90% fresh.
Right.
I mean, it's extreme opposites.
Right.
And I was looking, and Rotten Tomatoes has a feature now that if you're logged into Facebook, it will tell you, it gives you an opportunity to provide your own star rating for a movie.
Okay.
Which I've never done before.
Good. Great.
But it also
An opinion.
Right, everyone does. And it also tells you what other people who you were friends with on Facebook have rated the movie.
Yes.
And what I saw was people who shall remain nameless, and honestly, they're not even that close to us. But it was so, that kind of course you would give this 5 stars.
The highest possible. This is one of the best movies.
There was a couple people on there that gave it 5 stars. And I want to go back to the Goonies podcast where we talked about it's a phenomenon. And it simply put, I do think, and again, our differences here are Patrick does not like the movie, and Doug thinks the movie is not very good, but loves certain parts of it and more nostalgic. And that's a lot of the Goonies aspect of it, too. People watch Goonies or people saw Goonies for the first time when they were 8, 9 years old, or like you, 34. And they have this response to it that like, oh my God, this is my childhood. This is, you know, whatever. And that sticks with you. So even when you're 30-something, you're like, oh, the Goonies is great because I loved it when I was a kid. And who are you to shit on my childhood, you know, type thing. And I think that's a lot of that with Top Gun, too. And the Goonies actually is probably a little more serviceable than Top Gun, but Goonies doesn't have jets in the air.
True. And Top Gun is not a movie that I grew up with. And like you said, you watched it all the time in your house. I watched it never. And I've seen it, you know, every couple of years in my life. And every couple of years, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't really like this movie. And I can't remember anything about it.
Do you like Days of Thunder?
No.
Okay.
Fuck no.
I'm trying to think, like, what else, like, you know, kind of that seems to me the closest, like, they're taking it.
It's the exact same movie, except it's in a race car.
Right. It's like, this is the world of fighter jets. Right. This is the world of NASCAR. You know, and
he's fucking awesome. And then he's like, maybe I'm not fucking awesome, but then he's fucking awesome.
Right.
And Tony Scott directs.
And in theory, you'd think Nicole Kidman would be, as the love interest, would be hotter, but she is a frizzy-haired jungle cat in this.
Although I will take old Nicole Kidman over current Nicole Kidman. I mean, like, Eyes Wide Shut is her peak. That she's like, oh my God, you are the prettiest woman alive. She was very, very pretty, but I would take Days of Thunder or like Dead Calm Nicole Kidman over the current cat.
I think you're right though, because Eyes Wide Shut, there was a couple. She made like Birthday Girl and stuff where she super fox,
super pretty.
Yeah, Billy Bathgate, you would take her too. She shows the front bum,
the full spano. So I didn't grow up with Top Gun, but a lot of people did, and a lot of people just think it's fucking awesome based on that. And it is definitely a movie that, like, unfortunately, it gives license, it not just to Michael Bay in that he went to the Simpson-Bruckheimer School of Directing, in that he stole Tony Scott's aesthetic, but also, like you said, it's like critics 40%, fans 90%, and it gives license to this idea of like, fuck you, the fans have spoken. It doesn't matter if my movie's a piece of shit, because I sold it the right way, and people went and saw it, it's a hit, so it's good, right? It's Armageddon, it's Transformers.
It's even Kevin Smith saying, like, when critics, rightfully so, like, shit on Cop Out, or Zack and Miri Make a Porno, it's like, well, my fans love it, so, you know, like, but before you were the darling, like, when Kevin Smith made Clerks, and not Mallrats, but, like, he was kind of this indie darling that you just, you know, you kind of like him, you like the dick and fart jokes, but maybe he's not the most skilled auteur. And then, of course, he makes garbage for years, and the critics are finally like, no, that's kind of worn off. It's like, well, F the critics, this is just for my fans, and that's a lot of the any sort of blockbuster Michael Bay. But even Michael Bay came out this past week and said Transformers 2 was crap, is what he called it. It's like,
well, wow, of course you could say that now. Everyone hates it, right? But it still made insane amounts
of
money.
Well, those two things have to happen. Everyone has to hate it, and it made a shitload, which is allowing you to now shoot Transformers 3.
Right.
Or shoot, it's done. It's been, I'm sure it's in...
I can't wait! People are going to go see it, too. It makes me crazy how short people's memories are, because that commercial aired after the Super Bowl, and, like, the whole geek online community was like, oh, looks pretty cool, I'll totally go.
But that's
hope it's better than Part 2. Like, fuck you guys, learn a lesson.
Absolutely learn a lesson, because I learned my lesson, Pearl Harbor, the preview for that looked damn good, And it's like, this is going to be his, you know, we talked about this on the
Pearl Harbor podcast. So thank you for bringing up Pearl Harbor, because this is the point I want to get to.
You're welcome.
How, aside from, like, it's a little more, like, garish and a little dumber, how much different is Pearl Harbor from Top Gun?
Easy. Top Gun is short.
Okay.
It's, I think, 109 minutes.
Right.
No,
it's like 100 and...
No.
No, okay, yeah, you're right. I'm sorry.
I think it's more... Pearl Harbor is such a... I see your point. I think Pearl Harbor is the wrong comparison.
Maybe, but as I was listening to the dialogue in this movie, I was just thinking about dialogue. When we did the Pearl Harbor show, which if you haven't heard, listen to it at thismovie.blogspot.com and search for Pearl Harbor. We just ripped a lot on the dialogue, like how terrible all the dialogue was and all the character interactions and everything. We're just like, oh, it's so stupid. And we just were quoting bad lines. And I'm watching Top Gun today, and I'm like, how is this different? This is the same thing.
Well, I think Pearl Harbor, too, and I think that you're right, because...
Except Pearl Harbor was based on a real thing,
it's a real thing. It's historic. It's right. Absolutely disrespectful.
Right.
And it also is trying to do so much, as we talked about on that podcast. This movie is called Pearl Harbor. It ends with the bombing of an American naval base. How could this have a good ending?
Right.
But it can't, because that's like the halfway point, which is 2 fucking hours in the movie.
That's goose dying.
And then you've got them having
goose
to do
dying
the
is Top Gun's dual Pearl Harbor, raid. Is what I'm saying.
Yes. That's my Pearl Harbor. I think it's different in that respect. You're right, the dialogue is just as bad, but hopefully, maybe, at a certain point, the dialogue...
Here's Erica. Wait.
Wait.
Erica just cut us off.
Off.
She loves Pearl Harbor.
Your flow. Pearl
she's,
Harbor?
She's Top Gun, is what I meant to say.
Please, don't
are you bringing us Top Gun related snacks?
Yeah, these are Top Gun cookies that I made.
What are. That cookie is in the shape of goose dying.
Oh my god.
And they're here's all... one that's the shape of a penis.
They're all penises.
So they're all Tom Cruise penises?
Okay.
Oh, there's a Kelly McGillis vagina.
Okay, this is Tom Cruise's motorcycle.
For real? I wish we could do a video cast right now.
I wish you'd be taking pictures of these
well,
and posting
we can,
them
we can
along.
Arrange that.
Is this, if you want is to this spell them? Top Gun?
This is a T, and this is a G.
Okay, TG.
This is the volleyball used in the volleyball
playing
scene.
Playing with the boys.
Oh,
wow.
My God, this is...
Okay, this these were supposed to be Goose's dog tags, that, but they ballooned into a different shape.
Can
and
I
they were
please
shattered when he hit the
can I please throw these,
window?
These dog tag cookies into the ocean?
Yes. But do you see how
the
I
ocean
put his,
that is my
you
tummy?
See how I put his name in there? It says G O O S E.
And what's this? Is just a dick? What is that?
Well. It kind of turned into a penis.
Okay. Well, that's
I
fine.
Also had a microphone
for
when
he
sings
in that
the bar.
Never close your eyes.
I'm sorry, you're a little too much on key because he's saying something different.
Do it
entirely.
Again, Doug. Okay, so I had a microphone, but it fell on the floor and fell into pieces. And I think I had one more that didn't work out. So sorry, motorcycle, volleyball.
All right, we're
going to
eat this shit.
Yeah, we're going to eat these
the
while we do the top.
And
in like three words, why do you love Top Gun? Say Tom Cruise underpants.
I was going to say. Tom Cruise sunglasses.
Okay. Oh. Tom Cruise sunglasses.
By the way, the sales of
when
Ray-Ban Aviator sunglasses skyrocketed too.
Of course.
Yeah, when he leans over on the volleyball court, it's so quick. He leans over and he pushes the sunglasses up on his nose.
Yeah, that is a great
I also
scene.
Love when he's in flight school. Is that what they call it?
Flight school?
when he's Top Gun.
When he's in Top Gun school and he's sitting like this in the chair.
We can't. No
one can see.
He's leaning on his hand
yeah.
in like just a subtle, sexy way.
It
and
was
then he
very
kind of puts his fingers
very
by
sexy.
His mouth.
Yeah.
And he's like, tame the cunt!
As soon as... I'm sorry.
I hope you guys enjoy these underbaked cookies.
When you listen
I love
to this
cookies.
Podcast,
but you know, chocolate chip
you're
going to
want to divorce me. So
oh, no, those are in the oven now.
Sweet.
All right,
I'm going to want to divorce you?
I'm saying a lot of mean things about Top Gun. It's
and by
terrible.
Mean things, you mean...
I'm going to eat
I
Goose's.
Mean well, because I love Top Gun.
That's right.
Okay.
Thank you for the cookies.
I forgot what I was saying.
I did too. But we're going to enjoy these cookies. Top Gun
okay.
themed cookies.
So
Pearl
Top
Harbor,
Gun.
You're talking
yeah.
about why it's...
It's
Top
historic.
Good.
It shits on a lot of things. And it's also made in 2000...
Including my eyes.
When was it made? 2000... When was Pearl Harbor?
2001.
2001. You'd think we'd learn from to make something better. And granted, Top Gun is not... The dialogue is horrible. But there is something, a small part of it to be said for it being, like, just older, you know? And
yeah.
they're trying something retarded to, you know...
Yeah, and that's maybe the problem. Should they be blamed entirely for that? I don't know. But, like, they put in place a structure and a way of putting a movie together that is still being followed, even in Pearl Harbor.
That's the problem.
Like, the Pearl Harbor scene where they play volleyball, I thought was unnecessary. I was like, guys.
And where he leans, and it's just ever so sexy.
They're being attacked. Stop. Put your shirts on. What is the point of that scene, except just to show dudes with their shirts off
absolutely.
And sell a song on a soundtrack, right?
Because that's another,
the Kenny Loggins song.
And it's definitely written and performed just for the movie. It's so obvious a movie by committee, and we talked before about this, about the producers having so much say and so much control over everything, but also the Navy, also, you know, I'm sure
these are totally not cooked all the way.
I love them, though. They're undercooked. I hate overcooked.
The way that Top Gun is undercooked, DC.
So I think that it's just they need to put all these things in there.
So they're overrated. Okay, I get it.
Oh my God. Let me tell you a quick story, because we're nearing the end of the Top Gun.
No, we're not.
We're not? You have more to say?
No, not really. I fucking hate it.
I still love it. And here's why. I do not respond to it the same way as certain people on Rotten Tomatoes or friends of ours on Facebook that have
five stars.
5 stars.
Best movie ever.
I do not respond to it like that. But there is, and again, I know this is so kind of a qualifying Goonies-esque defense of it. There's still a part of it that even, and this has come up before, we watch Garden State, and I'm like preparing to not like it as much.
Right.
I'm at some other movie that, like, I think time has changed my opinion of this movie.
Right.
And Top Gun, I came into it thinking, like, I know this movie is garbage. But near the end of it,
garbage.
It makes, it's a weird kind of drug where it makes you, it gives me, like, this kind of happiness and comfort and warm feeling because it's so familiar.
Right.
It is so that, like, I can picture myself in my parents' living room watching this movie. And kind of in that moment, and at just like a different time. I know that sounds so cliched and so dumb.
No, I get that. And that was certainly part of the reaction I was having even to Clerks last week. And that wasn't even about being a kid, you know? That was...
Right. Well, it's definitely the same thing, though. It's nostalgic, right. Whatever. Here's what I'll say about a little quick story, which is kind of embarrassing, but is so honest and true and speaks to my reaction to Top Gun. When I was a kid, I used to pretend to be this animal. All right, just stick with me. So, you know, like, you build forts and stuff? You know, like, when you your parents were gone, you'd build, like, a sofa fort, and you'd take the cushions off and make, like, a little cave for yourself with blankets and stuff. So, obviously, for me, back as a kid, my parents would leave, and often they would leave me off, and I was a latchkey kid.
Yeah.
And I was home by myself. I was by myself all the time.
Never watching a bad DuckTales.
Never. There's not a bad DuckTales out there. There is a bad Darkwing Duck, because those aren't very good. But DuckTales is a good movie. You know why? Aerial action.
Yes.
Fighter jets in the skies.
You're thinking of Tailspin.
Fudge! You're absolutely right. I was thinking of Tailspin. Tailspin, also, not one bad episode of Tailspin. All right, so when I was a kid, I used to make forts and sofas and stuff like that.
No.
And I pretended to be this animal,
mm-hmm.
which kind of, like, took over for a while. Like, and keep in mind, I'm the...
Like, there was no Doug, there was only Zool?
You could only speak to me through the animal.
It
wasn't like that at all. But it was a thing. I was a kid. And I was probably, like, Mrs. seven... Torrance. I think when a movie came out, I was 7 years old. I probably saw it when I was 8, so this is like 8-9 years old when I was like doing this. So I would make sofa forts, and I would have fun, and I would like run around and pretend. And I think it was also like I would play with our dog, you know, and so just trying to be another animal.
Was this all just an excuse to shit on the carpet?
My animal that I made up for myself, I called it a Haverick. And I think it's... is this in this whole podcast...
You know that this goes on to the internet, right? And people listen to it.
Have I ever told you that before?
No. Would I be reacting this way if I was familiar with the Haverick?
Dude, put yourself in my shoes. It was 1987.
My parents were home too much. Even.
My parents were never home. I'd make these forts. I'd play
I'm
with my dog.
Volleyball and
I would
want
to be like, you know, an animal, as a lot of kids did. They projected themselves on animals and whatever else. But my point is, I thought about that this morning. Like, and it was funny because it actually came up recently with my sister Allison. She brought it up to me. She remembered that I had an animal called a Haverick. And it was like, you know, just a completely dumb, like, little kid running around. But my point is that it had to be, aside from all that, you're right, it's completely retarded. It's on the internet now.
It's very funny.
And make fun of me
I'm not making fun of you.
But the point is, I got to think, without analyzing this too much, I got to think the reason I called it a Haverick was because of Top Gun.
I would
because
assume so.
It's like, well, I can't call it Maverick, and Maverick is a thing already, and also a character in this movie that I watched, like, every weekend. But I'm going to call it a Haverick because it vaguely sounds Jungle Cat-like.
Kind of.
So
it was like more of a jungle cat? What family did it sort of, what genus?
I don't know. It's probably like more like a dog. Probably like my dog Tasha. May she rest in peace. Not a death talk.
Tom Gunn killed her too.
Jesus Christ. Okay, so that was my little story. I thought about that this morning. I thought, you know what better place? I'm not going to hold anything back. I'm going
to
tell.
No, I'm glad. There's nothing to be embarrassed about.
Yeah.
I'd be more embarrassed that you said you kind of like Top Gun, actually.
I kind of like Top Gun.
Yeah. I'm so bored by it.
All right, now I'm going to eat a cookie, asshole. Yeah.
My problem is there's just nothing to hook onto ever. Anytime I see it, I'm just bored and waiting for like this next, okay, when's he going to sing to her in the bar and embarrass me in the audience? When is Goose going to die? When are they going to play volleyball? You know, I'm waiting for this next thing that I remember so that I can get to the end, because at no point do I ever, even movies I don't really like, I can get drawn into and just like sort of follow the story, you know? And Top Gun, I just never do, because I just don't ever feel like there's a story being told. It's just sort of this series of things that happen.
It's weird. I think that Top Gun is one of the first movies that kind of, I mean, obviously it wasn't the first, as you point out, like blockbuster type movies. And it certainly wasn't the first action movie. And it certainly wasn't a movie that kind of, you know, made Jerry Bruckheimer, you know, a big time producer. He obviously had a resume and acumen and a whole style of doing things before Top Gun. But I think that Top Gun was one of the first movies that kind of like have this very deliberate, specific formula. Even Beverly Hills Cop, I think, is a pretty good movie. I don't know.
It's kind of overrated, too. It's another one that people are like, oh, that's great. No, it's not that great.
But it's better than Top Gun.
I would agree with that.
Okay. But Top Gun, I think, has this, it's this weird kind of formula that I think that, and again, it's just because it was one of the first times, I think, and again, I'm not a film historian. I don't know all the different, you know, like blockbuster action movies, summer blockbusters, you know, that kind of subscribe to the same formulas. But I think it was one of the first ones to actually incorporate this formula, and it just stuck. It just, this bullshit kind of like, we don't need to have a lot of character development because the name will be Maverick, and they'll have a volleyball game and all these other things, and all of a sudden it's now just now become de facto. And again, fast forward 25 years to where we are now, and we're even more angry with it, I think, or at least you are, like, you're way more angry with it, too, because of how successful it was. If it was just this throwaway movie that was such a time capsule of 1986, which it is, by the way, it's absolutely just a movie.
Kelly McGillis, isn't it? I mean,
right, it's a movie of that year, of that era. It's so obviously Arab. This movie that is, it can't be made now, at least not the same way. It could.
And yet it's made every week.
Well, that's, right. Because, I don't know, that's...
It makes me crazy. And Tom Cruise, of course, would go on to play this role for the next 10 years.
I'm not going
to
touch this phallus cookie, by the way.
No, I don't. You're not gay. Top Gun is a super gay movie, too. What's that about? And I mean, maybe I would never notice that if not for that monologue that Quentin Tarantino does in Sleep With Me about how it's super homoerotic. But, like, it really is. And I don't even... Moments that don't need to... When he leans into Rick Rossovich, he's just like, Slider.
You stink.
You stink. Like, A, you're going to kiss. And B, you stink. That's the best you can do. That's the great insult. Slider, you stink. And then he walks away. That's horrible. I would have done better than that when I was in second grade. But, you know, he plays the race car driver who's awesome in Days of Thunder. He plays the lawyer who's awesome in A Few Good Men. He plays the bartender who's awesome in Cocktail. Just like, and that's why... You know, in like Magnolia or Vanilla Sky, like I like those movies so much more because he's sort of fucking with that image that he spent 20 years developing. It's just like, here's a guy who's fucking awesome who realizes, no, he isn't, and never has that moment where he's like, no way, I'm still totally fucking awesome. It's just, no, you're not actually. You're a joke. And that kind of stuff is way better to me than Top Gun.
Well, you'll be happy.
I'm really going out on a limb. What I'm saying is I like Magnolia better than So
you'll be happy to know
there,
that
I said it.
Top Gun 2 has been talked about. And
of course it has. Around. Because it's a property that everybody knows.
Well, it also speaks
to... And they'll ask Tom Cruise to come on as, like, a flight instructor, and he'll be in, like, three scenes, and he'll pass the torch to fucking Channing Tatum
to Shia
and
shit. LaBeouf.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, we could write that movie right now. And it would pretty much just be a remake of Top Gun, except Tom Cruise would play... an instructor.
But, like, way cooler than Tom Skerritt.
I don't know. Tom Skerritt's pretty badass. So I don't like Top Gun, and I'm going to be the asshole, because I think a lot of people, like you, have, even if they recognize, like, it's not great, they've grown up on it, and that it's one of these movies that just they have fondness for.
Right. And unfortunately,
and I'm not even trying to be like Mr. Controversy, like go out on a limb. Like, guess what, guys? Top Gun isn't good. I've just never responded to it ever. And I know that I'm not going to be well liked for that.
Well, unlike, I mean, I said this before, but the Goonies thing too, it's like Goonies is even more acceptable as that kind of movie because it's not, it didn't change anything. You know, because it's not, even though it's not great, it's not garbage and it didn't beget other garbage.
Right. And at least with Goonies, I was just asking the question, like, I don't know, is it good? Because I can't tell, because I definitely used to like it, but now I'm like, I don't know.
Where Top Gun is like, well, it's kind of garbage in a lot of ways. The story, the dialogue, all that stuff. And even the aerial sequences, you kind of take that out and you're right. There's nothing there. And if you do that movie again, you lose all of that even too, just because it would be CGI.
There's one shot near the end where the camera is like strapped almost to the, like the wing of a jet as it takes off.
Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. And you know, Tony Scott now has this style that's fucking unwatchable. Like
Domino.
It's just nonstop.
By the way, listen to the Domino podcast.
Yeah, please do. Where we talk about Tony Scott some more. And at least in this movie, he definitely constructs these shots that we talked about, like with Michael Bay, where it's just, it has nothing to do with reality, but it's just, I have to have the sun setting, and here's $25,000.
Right.
These shots, everything has to be beautiful, and Tom Cruise has to be just, you know, exactly sweaty, and like, they have to play volleyball with their shirts off, and... but at least it's not like super fast editing, and like, it's not super flashy. I think for 1986, it kind of was, you know? Because it obviously influenced it drew influence from commercials and MTV, and then in turn influenced those back.
It's a thing too, where you think about any sort of big movie that comes out that kind of changes the game.
Mm-hmm.
And Pulp Fiction is the most obvious example that comes out. And no matter what, Pulp Fiction is great. Pulp Fiction is an excellent, excellent movie. It's a game changer. Top Gun is not a great, great movie. But it's also a game changer.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate thing is, no matter if it's great or if it's not great, the result is always going to be shittier.
Right.
So you got Pulp Fiction comes out, and you got Love in a 45, and it slowly gets worse, and the aesthetic just is so worn off.
And then
you
start to resent Pulp Fiction, because you're like, look what you begat. But then you go back, and you're like, wait, Pulp Fiction's fucking awesome.
So I think this is my earlier point about Top Gun, too, is that like if it was, I mean, because it was the first to, I mean, it's still shitty, and I don't. There's no excuse for that.
Right.
But because it was that first one that just is kind of like, and I think it was not experimental because they obviously knew certain formulas would work and stuff, but it definitely was like all out there. Like this is the first one. It's just like, it's all on the table.
Right.
And it's like,
it was like the first one where they've got the package exactly right.
Right. And it's like, oh, this is it. This is it. This is the, this is the package. This is what I can make.
And it still is, which again, you know, I guess to the movie's credit, like, they developed the formula that's still in place over 20 years later, so yay, Top Gun, way to go.
Right, so Top Gun 2 will be great, but it'll be, like, for me at least, and again, I say this as a person who loves military stuff and plane stuff, I will be bored by it because it's just going to be, you know, like a Battle Los Angeles commercial where it's just, it looks really cool, but then there's still not that gravity of, like, an actual explosion. It's just like, you know, CGI people running on a beach, you know?
That's going to be awesome.
I'm looking forward to it.
Do you think Anthony Edwards will be CGI?
I think he's going to CGI his hairpiece on there.
Anyway, that's Top Gun. If you want to email me about how much you fucking disagree with me or hate me, it's
Do they ever get back to you about, like...
Every once in a while, I'll get something. Usually, it's positive. Only a few times has it been like, you missed the boat. One time, I said something, like, less than flattering about a scene in Fright Night, which I otherwise praised and was like, I fucking love Fright Night. I just could do without this one moment. And I got an email that was like, you don't know what you're talking about. All right, I guess.
Thanks, Peter Jackson.
Anyway, fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. And as always, visit our site, fthismovie.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
Doug, take us out with a Top Gun quote.
I wish you, because the first thing that pops in my head is like the most obvious ones, but I want to give you something more.
You feel the need for speed.
That's so lame.
Yeah, that's and then they high five, like this is a thing they do.
Because I guarantee, I'm not guaranteed, but just because I've seen so much, I could probably quote the entire movie, but what's coming to my head
Give me a good one.
I don't, what's
a good, there are no good quotes in Top Gun.
Well, I think point? That now you're putting me on the spot again? Like, what's the story, Doug? Tell me. And then you lean back in your chair like a king with your crown.
That's right.
And you put it up to me? That's not very nice. What is the quote? The quote? You'll be the quote.